energy to AJ.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear stories from Dan Friedel and Brian Lynn. Later, Jill Robbins and John Russell present this week's Ask a Teacher. We close with an American story. This week, we hear The Caliph, Cupid, and the Clock by O. Henry. But first, here is a question for our listeners. What do witches, rabbits, and dinosaurs have in common? The answer? They are the top three most popular Halloween costumes this year in the United States. That information comes from data gathered by the Google News Initiative. A special website called Google Frightgeist provides a look at the 500 most popular costumes this year nationwide. It also lets users know what costumes they are likely to see where they live on Halloween night. Rounding out the top five most searched costumes this year are the superhero Spider-Man and Cruella de Vil, a dog-hating character from the Disney movie The 101 Dalmatians. The 2021 films Cruella and Spider-Man No Way Home are surely behind the popularity of these two costumes. Frightgeist offers more than just lists of the year's most popular costumes. It also aims to help people who do not yet know what they are going to dress up as for Halloween. And it provides suggestions for people who hope to stand out with unusual and rare costume choices. Users can choose, "Show me something less popular," or "Surprise me," to get truly unusual costume ideas. For example, if you choose witch on the website, but are looking to dress up as something less common, Frightgeist suggests ideas like Tin Man and Candy Corn. The Tin Man is a character from the film and book The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. Frightgeist says it is the 339th most popular costume in America. It notes that you have a shockingly low chance of running into another Tin Man costume at a party. Candy corn is a sweet food that looks like a piece of corn. It is a common thing to eat during the Halloween season, but it is a decidedly uncommon costume. The site's costume map gives users a look at the most popular costumes in cities across America. For example, the top costume around Charleston, South Carolina, is an astronaut. In the northernmost part of Maine, an elephant appears to be a popular choice. And in Topeka, Kansas, you might find a frightening number of zombies wandering the streets on Halloween. To see more costume information and to get ideas for yourself, you can visit frightgeist.withgoogle.com.
The Food and Drug Administration asked food companies to use less salt in more than 150 items, as a way to make Americans healthier. The agency targeted manufacturers that sell foods made from grains, as well as potato chips and French fries. A total of 163 items made the list. The FDA said the extra sodium people eat, sodium is the chemical name for salt, mostly comes from foods made or eaten away from home. The FDA suggested that food companies slowly reduce the amount of salt they add to their products. In doing so, Americans can get used to eating less salt. The agency called for a gradual reduction of 12% over the next 2.5 years. If the companies agree, it will reduce the average American's sodium intake from 3,400 to 3,000 milligrams per day. The FDA suggests people over the age of 14 take in only 2,300 milligrams per day, but the goal is to reduce the sodium over time. Susan Main leads the FDA's Food Safety and Nutrition Division. She said the gradual reduction should reduce negative feedback from food makers and those who buy their products. Some health experts, however, criticized the agency for not producing a full 10-year timeline for sodium reduction. Dr. Dariush Mozafarian leads Tufts University's School of Nutrition Science and Policy. He said two recent studies suggest the FDA should be firmer with its guidelines. A 2019 study from the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine showed that less sodium reduced some long-term health problems. Another recent study in China showed people who used a salt substitute reduced their chances of stroke and heart problems compared to those who used regular salt. Mozafarian said the effect of the sodium guidelines will depend on how well the FDA monitors food companies and their progress. Some business organizations, such as the American Frozen Food Institute, said they are already offering products with less sodium. I'm Dan Friedel.
Elephants in a protected community in Kenya are being fed goat's milk as a less costly form of food. Workers at the Riteti Elephant Sanctuary in northern Kenya say the elephants enjoy drinking the goat's milk. They say the milk may be healthier for them than other choices. The sanctuary had been using powdered baby milk to feed the young animals it cares for, but it decided to test goat's milk, which costs less and is locally available. The sanctuary rescues young elephants that are found alone in the wild. It cares for them until they are old enough to be returned to the wild. Dr. Stephen Chigay is the sanctuary's medical advisor. He told Reuters news agency the goat's milk seems to be especially helpful to baby elephants. This is an animal that has just maybe lost a mother. They have been separated from their family, he said. So they get a lot of psychological traumas. This kind of trauma can harm the animal's overall health, Chagay said. But goat's milk has been found to be very good for the survival and health of baby elephants, he added. Chagay said goat's milk is helpful because it contains a different kind of highly digestible protein not found in powdered baby milk. This results in fewer stomach problems for the young elephants. The change to goat's milk is expected to reduce feeding costs for the sanctuary, Chagay said. The sanctuary usually keeps between 15 to 30 elephants. Local community member Liwana Lenakukunya is one of many goat farmers selling milk to the sanctuary. She told Reuters she was happy to get new earnings. Lenakukunya said many of the farmers now earning money are women. Since we started milking goats and selling milk to the sanctuary, at least we have our own cash you can feed your family with, she said. I'm Brian Lynn.
This week on Ask a Teacher, we answer a question from Phu in Vietnam. When do we use sometimes, sometime, and sometime? What is the difference between them? Dear Phu, thank you for writing to us. These words may look mostly the same, but they actually have different meanings and uses. Let us begin with sometimes. It is the simplest of the three because it only has one meaning. It means at certain times. Sometimes is an adverb, so it affects the meaning of the main verb in a statement. Here is an example using sometimes.
The children sometimes take their dog to the park to play.
Now, let us move on to sometime. This word can be an adverb or an adjective. As an adverb, it means at an unspecified or unknown time in the past or future. Look at these examples.
The holiday party will be sometime in December. Thieves stole my bicycle sometime last night.
As an adjective, you can use sometime to talk about what someone was in the past. It can also be used to describe what someone sometimes does in the present. Here's an example.
Singer Barbara Streisand is a sometime screenwriter and director.
You may hear sometime to describe a relationship with a friend or lover.
Police questioned the victim's sometime lover about the events of the crime.
But in spoken American English, sometime is most often used as an adverb. Finally, some and time can be separated. The two words can act as an adjective and a noun. Although this expression can mean any length of time, it usually means a long time, as in this example.
For some time, automakers have worked to make cars safer.
What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. Thank you for spending some time with us today. I'm Jill Robbins.
The Caliph, Cupid, and the Clock. Prince Michael of Valueluna sat in the park on the seat he liked best. In the coolness of the night, he felt full of life. The other seats were not filled. Cool weather sends most people home. The moon was rising over the houses on the east side of the park. Children laughed and played. Music came softly from one of the nearer streets. Around the little park, cabs rolled by. The trains that traveled high above the street rushed past. These cabs and trains, with their wild noises, seemed like animals outside the park. But they could not enter. The park was safe and quiet. And above the trees was the great round shining face of a lighted clock in a tall old building. Prince Michael's shoes were old and broken. No shoemaker could ever make them like new again. His clothes were very torn. The hair of his face had been growing for 2 weeks. It was all colors, gray and brown and red and green-yellow. His hat was older and more torn than his shoes and his other clothes. Prince Michael sat on the seat he liked best, and he smiled. It was a happy thought to him that he had enough money to buy every house he could see near the park if he wished. He had as much gold as any rich man in this proud city of New York. He had as many jewels and houses and land. He could have sat at table with kings and queens. All the best things in the world could be his. Art, pleasure, beautiful women, honor. All the sweeter things in life were waiting for Prince Michael of Valjaluna, whenever he might choose to take them. But instead, he was choosing to sit in torn clothes on a seat in a park. For he had tasted the fruit of the tree of life. He had not liked the taste. Here in this park, he felt near to the beating heart of the world. He hoped it would help him to forget that taste. These thoughts moved like a dream through the mind of Prince Michael. There was a smile across his face with its many-colored hair. Sitting like this in torn clothes, he loved to study other men. He loved to do good things for others. Giving was more pleasant to him than owning all his riches. It was his chief pleasure to help people who were in trouble. He liked to give to people who needed help. He liked to surprise them with princely gifts. But he always gave wisely, after careful thought. And now, as he looked at the shining face of the great clock, his smile changed. The prince always thought big thoughts. When he thought of time, he always felt a touch of sadness. Time controlled the world. People had to do what time commanded. Their comings and goings were always controlled by a clock. They were always in a hurry and always afraid because of time. It made him sad. After a little while, a young man in evening clothes came and sat upon a seat near the prince. For half an hour he sat there, nervously. Then he began to watch the face of the lighted clock above the trees. The prince could see that the young man had a trouble. He could also see that, somehow, the clock was part of the trouble. The prince rose and went to the young man's seat. "I am a stranger, and I shouldn't speak to you," he said. "But I can see that you are troubled. I am Prince Michael of Valjaluna. I do not want people to know who I am. That is why I wear these torn clothes. It is a small pleasure of mine to help those who need help. First, I must feel sure they are worth helping." I think you are. And perhaps your trouble may be ended if you and I together decide what to do about it." The young man looked up brightly at the prince, brightly, but he was still troubled. He laughed then, but still the look of trouble remained. But he accepted this chance to talk to someone. "I'm glad to meet you, prince," he said pleasantly. "Yes, I can see you don't want to be known. That's easy to see. Thanks for your offer to help, but I don't see what you can do. It's my own problem, but thanks." Prince Michael sat down at the young man's side. People often said no to him, but they always said it pleasantly. "Clocks," said the prince, "are tied to the feet of all men and women. I've seen you watching that clock. That face commands us to act, whether or not we wish to act. Let me tell you not to trust the numbers on that face. They will destroy you if they can. Stop looking at that clock. What does it know about living men and women?" "I usually don't look at that clock," said the young man. "I carry a watch, except when I wear evening clothes. I know men and women as I know the trees and the flowers," said the prince warmly and proudly. "I have studied many years, and I am very rich. There are few troubles that I cannot help. I have read what is in your face. I have found honor and goodness there, and trouble. Please accept my help. I can see that you are wise. Show how wise you are. Do not judge me by my torn clothes. I am sure I can help you." The young man looked at the clock again, and his face grew darker. Then he looked at a house beside the park. Lights could be seen in many rooms. 10 minutes before nine, said the young man. He raised his hands and then let them fall as if hope had gone. He stood up and took a quick step or two away. "Remain," commanded Prince Michael. His voice was so powerful that the young man turned quickly. He laughed a little. "I'll wait 10 minutes and then I'll go," he said in a low voice, as if only to himself. Then to the prince he said, "I'll join you. We'll destroy all the clocks, and women too." "Sit down," said the prince softly. "I do not accept that. I do not include women. Women are enemies of clocks. They are born that way. Therefore, they are friends of those who wish to destroy clocks. If you can trust me, tell me your story." The young man sat down again and laughed loudly. "Prince, I will," he said. He did not believe that Prince Michael was really a prince. His manner of speaking proved that. "You see that house, Prince? That house with lights and 3 windows on the 3rd floor? At 6 tonight, I was in that house with the young lady I'm going to... was going to marry. I'd been doing wrong, my dear Prince, and she heard about it. I was sorry. I wanted her to forget it. We're always asking women to forget things like that, aren't we, Prince? 'I want time to think,' she said. 'I will either forget it forever or never see your face again.' At 8:30, she said, 'Watch the middle window on the 3rd floor of this house. If I decide to forget, I will hang out a long white cloth. You will know then that everything is as it was before, and you may come to me. If you see nothing hanging from the window, you will know that everything between us is finished forever.' 'That,' said the young man, 'is why I've been watching that clock. The time was past 23 minutes ago. Do you see why I'm a little troubled, my torn prince?' "Let me tell you again," said Prince Michael in his soft voice, "that women are the born enemies of clocks. Clocks are bad. Women are good. The white cloth may yet appear." "Never," said the young man hopelessly. "You don't know Marion. She is always on time to the minute. That was the first thing I liked about her. At 8:31, I should have known that everything was finished. I'm going to go west. I'll get on the train tonight. I'll find some way to forget her. Good night, Prince." Prince Michael smiled his gentle, understanding smile. He caught the other's arm. The bright light in the prince's eyes was softening. It was dreamlike, clouded. "Wait," he said, "till the clock tells the hour. I have riches and power, and I'm wiser than most men. But when I hear the clock tell the hour, I'm afraid. Stay with me till then. This woman shall be yours. You have the promise of the Prince of Valleluna. On the day you are married, I will give you $100,000 and a great house beside the Hudson River. But there must be no clocks in that house. Do you agree to that?" "Sure," said the young man. "I don't like clocks." He looked again at the clock above the trees. It was 3 minutes before nine. "I think," said Prince Michael, "that I will sleep a little. It has been a long day." He lay down on the seat, as if he had often done it before. "You'll find me on this park on any evening when the weather is good," said the prince. "Come to me when you know the day you'll be married. I'll give you the money." "Thanks, prince," said the young man. "That day isn't going to come, but thanks." Prince Michael fell into a deep sleep. His hat rolled on the ground. The young man lifted it, placed it over the prince's face, and moved one of the prince's legs into an easier position. "Poor fellow," he said. He pulled the torn coat together over the prince's body. It was nine. Loud and surprising came the voice of the clock, telling the hour. The young man took a deep breath and turned for one more look at the house. And he gave a shout of joy. From the middle window on the third floor, a snow-white, wonderful cloth was hanging. Through the park, a man came hurrying home. "Will you tell me the time, please?" asked the young man. The other man took out his watch. 8:29, and then he looked up at the clock. "But that clock is wrong," the man said. "The first time in 10 years, my watch is always—" But he was talking to no one. He turned and saw the young man running toward the house with three lighted windows on the third floor. And in the morning, two cops walked through the park. There was only one person to be seen, a man asleep on a long park seat. They stopped to look at him.
"It's Michael, a dreamer," said one. "He's been sleeping like this in the park for 20 years. He won't live much longer, I guess."
The other cop looked at something in the sleeper's hand.
"Look at this," he said. $50. I wish I could have a dream like that."
And then they gave Prince Michael of Valleluna a hard shake and brought him out of his dreams and into real life.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.